Hour of 8 o'clock, having arrived, I'll call to order Government Operations Reform Technology and Elections. Members, we don't have a quorum, but we do have Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson, I will move that House File 2564 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Rules Committee. Representative Carlson, to your bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is a constitutional amendment, and there was a... an amendment that should have been distributed that it would be all right if we could put that amendment on and then the bill would be in the form that I would like to present it.
Representative Carlson, as soon as I have the amendment.
And maybe while you're looking for the amendment, I can mention what the amendment does.
Okay, Representative Carlson, we don't have a quorum. I'll move the amendment so it's before us, but we won't take action on it until we have a quorum. So, Representative Carlson, I will move the A1 amendment, and then the amendment puts the bill in the shape that you want it.
Sure, and then under the circumstances, I'll explain it as though the amendment were there.
Representative Carlson, we do have a quorum, so with that, I will renew my motion on the A1 amendment to House File 2554. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Carlson, to your bill as amended.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, House File 2554 amends the Constitution to allow the legislature to call a special session. Under current law, only the governor is able to call a special session. And this amendment would allow both the governor and the legislature to call a special session. And I'd like to mention to... committee members, this proposal is not unique when you look at things nationally. 33 states allow the legislature to call a special session, so we're actually in the minority in that regard. After the amendment was put on, if a special session were to be called, it would have to be limited to 7 days. And it could be called in one of two ways by the legislature, by petition among the members, and we clarified with the amendment that that would be a majority in each body would petition for a special session, or it could be called by the leadership in both bodies. So there's two ways the special session could be called by the legislature. The amendment would not change the governor's current power in terms of the governor being able to call a special session, but what it would allow, in my view, is more balance between the two bodies, more balance between the legislature and the governor. It would also provide for more transparency. And what often happens now is that negotiations take place often in the governor's office or sometimes even in the governor's mansion, and there's an announcement that an agreement has been reached and then a special session is called. Sometimes that's for one day, and it's very difficult for the legislature under those circumstances and for the public, more importantly, to have much input. So under this scenario, with the balance more clearly defined between the two bodies and the ability then of the legislature to call a special session and do it in a way that would be within 7 days, you could have committee hearings, you could have public input, there just would be more openness, if you will, in the process. So Mr. Chairman, I would also like to point out, I did take a look at the states that have this provision. It's not used very often. In fact, I would say it's seldom used. But I think what happens is that there is more balance between the two bodies. And if we look at recent history in Minnesota, you know, there were strong desires to have had a special session called a little bit faster when we were dealing with the bridge situation with the flooding in southeastern Minnesota. There could have been a much faster response than what we ultimately had. So I'll stop at that point, Mr. Chairman, and take questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Broad.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would hate for a bill with this big of an impact to go through without any questions. Representative Carlson, I appreciate you bringing forward an idea for reform. I'm just not sure that this is a good idea for reform. I think it's a small step toward making special sessions easier, but a giant leap toward a full-time legislature in the state of Minnesota, which I think the citizens would absolutely reject. One thing you said that it will facilitate negotiations and make them more public. How does this bill and the changes you're proposing actually make negotiations any different?
Well, currently,
Representative Carlson,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ross, currently only the governor can call a special session. So the governor would have, or does have, very much an upper hand. You know, he'd do it exactly the way the governor wants, or he simply won't call a special session. So there's not the kind of balance of power, if you will, between the excuse me, I've got the what somebody this morning called the Capitol cold. My voice fades in and out, like about half of us do, I guess. So in those negotiations, you would have more balance. And let me tell you a story. It goes back a number of years. I'm at home watching the 10 o'clock news, and there's some difficulty resolving some budget issues, and all of a sudden on the news, stepping out of the governor's office, the governor was Al Quie, so that's how long ago it is, the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader of the Senate, and they announced that they had reached a budget agreement. They go off camera, and I receive a phone call from the Speaker of the House. We're going to have an amendment for you tomorrow morning on a bill that you're authoring on the Immigration Resource Center at the University of Minnesota. And I said something like, oh, really? What is the amendment? Well, it is the agreement, the budget balancing bill. We'll have the amendment ready for you at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. The agreement is so tight there should be no amendments. And I asked, I said, well, what happens to the Immigration Resource Center? Because they said it was a strike everything after the enacting clause. That's gone. You'll have to take that up next year. And it was a bill that was readily available. But my point is, where was the public input? Where was the public involvement? We acted on the bill that morning. A special session was called that day. And it was over $1 billion in tax increases, budget cuts, shifts, any number of things, and there just wasn't any opportunity. So actually I developed an interest in this legislation at that point in time, brought it forward, and it failed by one vote in the Rules Committee. I shouldn't probably mention a bill that didn't make it, but it was so long ago. So what happened this summer was the need for what I thought was a faster response on a couple of issues, and looking back at the history of special sessions, I decided to revisit the issue. But I hope that helps Representative Broad and kind of explain what I feel is the need.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. I appreciate that. And Mr. Chair, one of the concerns that I hear out in the public when special sessions are called is that it essentially allows the legislature to not get their work done and then come back in and not get their work done and then come back in. And it seems like this could create a situation of perennial not getting our work done just because we have the fallback position of having a special session that's easier to call. So that's one concern that I'd like you to address. And then a second concern is, generally speaking, when you make something easier, you get more of it. And so how do you suggest that we won't get more special sessions along the way?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rod, I have some information here on several states that have the authority. Since 1980, Arizona, that way you learned a lot about some other states, had 32 special sessions. Now, these are states that the legislature can call itself into special session. 32 of them were called by the governor, zero by the legislature. Delaware has had 9 special sessions in the past few years, 6 called by the governor, 3 by the legislature. Florida, where the power exists, you have 10 called by the governor, 4 by the legislature. Hawaii, it's 1-1. Illinois, it's 9 by the governor, 1 by the legislature. Louisiana, it's been 10 by the governor, 0 by the legislature. So I could go on with some others, but the point is that it's not, in my view, a power that's overused. There would also be, I think, public pressure that would, if you were to call special sessions frequently or that were not needed, that would exist as well. By the way, one thing I didn't mention, after I introduced the bill, there were several editorials on it across the state, the Barron Tribune, the Bemidji, Duluth, to mention a few. And they were all, by and large, very favorable, saying that something should be done. But they did, in some of those editorials, express concern about the potential length of a special session, and that's why I brought forward that amendment that you adopted earlier. That would limit it to 7 days.
Representative Emmer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson. I sat here as I came in this morning, and I'm thinking it's deja vu, because yesterday I listened to the self-proclaimed historian in the legislature, and today I have a better historian. I've got them both in the room, Representative Kahn and Representative Carlson.
Well, I'm a former history teacher, Mr. Chairman,
Representative
so
Carlson.
I have some credentials that the other historian doesn't.
But you both have one thing in common. You worked with Al Cui while I was in high school, so... Representative Kahn, how do you know I'm not still... Well, members... members, could we go through the chair, please? Mr. Chairman, in all seriousness, I share the concerns that Representative Broad has in terms of a move towards a full-time legislature. And the question that I have, Representative Carlson, I think the public would disagree with this, and I don't know what kind of feedback you're getting. I think the public would disagree that we need to move towards this type of year-round professional politician, legislator. Question is, if you look at your proposal, it says members elected to both houses. Say this gets passed, well then you've effectively taken away, as you've described it, the governor's upper hand on special sessions. But I'm just wondering how you think the Senate and the House will actually be able to agree on anything so that we don't have a special session that never ends. Representative Carroll.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Emmer, first of all, the amendment that was adopted earlier limits it to seven legislative days.
So that
assures that it will end. And I would probably guess that you wouldn't even use the full 7 days in most instances. As you would get geared up for a special session, you may have a situation where, if it's in the interim, committees may have met in advance of the session and prepared their legislation, and then you would come in for some time less than that. But if you were to use the process of committee hearings during the session and an issue began in a policy committee and had financial implications, when you can map it out, 7 days would work quite well. So there would be that end point.
Representative, thank you, Representative Carlson. And I respect the fact that you've got years of doing this, but the question still is, and I don't know that you answered it, first with the 7 days, I'm sorry, I came in late, I do think that still poses a problem because you could continue to call unless there's some protection that you only get 1 7-day session per biennium. It seems to me that you just keep renewing that 7 days. And the bigger problem that I see, and I don't know that you've answered, is I've seen a lot of tension and a lot of disagreement between the two houses, between the Senate and the House of Representatives over the past year. Even though they're controlled by one party, those two bodies seem to have some different points of view and possibly even some different agendas. How are you going to overcome the problem where those two bodies may not see eye to eye and you don't get anything done?
Representative Carlson. Mr. Chairman, Representative Emmer, a couple of things. One, you, or at least I would assume the mere fact that you would have a special session either called by the leadership jointly or by petition in both bodies means that there is interest up front in calling the special session. Secondly, if you're in special session and you have a drop-dead day 7 legislative days later, that's going to force the decisions to be made. So I think there's enough checks and balances. The third point I would make is that when you look at the history of states that do have that authority, it is not used that often. I don't know if you were in the room when I read off a few of them, where the vast majority in most states, when they've had special sessions, continue to be called by the governor. But I suspect that there's a different type of negotiations that goes on at the governor, perhaps in some of those instances, not been willing or hadn't reached some sort of an accommodation with the legislature. Perhaps they might have called more than what's on the list. But it's a fairly limited use. And in the end, the other check, of course, is that the governor still has, one, that opportunity to call a special session, but in the end has to sign the legislation that would be enacted by the legislature. So you still have those traditional checks and balances as well.
Mr. Chair, just as an observation, the point that you just made, Representative Carlson, about that 7 days, and it would be by agreement of legislative leadership, it strikes me that the very problem that you have pointed out, that is a lack of transparency, this would in fact encourage under your 7-day proposal. Not only are there issues, I think, in terms of the 7 days and agreement between the Senate and the House, but you might also be exacerbating the very problem that you pointed out, which is the small group of people will have to make a decision, perhaps out of the public view, in order to expedite the process. And perhaps the representative sitting next to me, who's done a lot of work on this, maybe he has a different observation, but I think it might cause a bigger problem than the one we have.
Representative Olson. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and please forgive my being late, and that if this was covered, I'll follow up on it later. But 7 days session, is there anything here, have you addressed anything, Representative Carlson, about rules of the special session? Will we have to follow the rules of the regular session, or will it be like our current special session seem to operate, where we really don't follow the rules and it forces kind of an ad hoc committee process between the bodies, and we technically don't have rules in it? And the real issue, I'll highlight that as well, the real issue of that is that we have to suspend rules all the time to really act, which gives a lot of power to certain members.
Representative Carlson. Well, Mr. Chairman, this amendment only deals with the calling of a special session. It does not change any of the workings that we currently would have with a special session. The issue that you raised with whether it's called by the governor or by the legislature, I would have real problems if we were going to begin to address the internal workings and rules of the legislature and the constitutional amendment.
Representative Olson, once we're past bill deadline, there will be 2 hearings in this committee with the National Council of State Legislatures, specifically dealing with the internal operations of the legislature and its rules. I think you will find that very instructive. So if you want to hold those questions until those 2 hearings, that would be a good idea. But we will be addressing the very concerns you've brought up. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you apprising me of that. I'll just leave with this comment on this bill. Since this bill is amended for only 7 days, it is extremely problematic because we hardly have time to do anything if we're going to follow the rules of the regular session and hear bills three separate days and so forth and follow those requirements, and therefore would oppose this bill.
Any further discussion? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, Representative Carlson, if you know, of all the states that allow the legislatures to call a special session, do they have as broad of authority as we have once we get into special session? For example, what I'm referring to is Wisconsin. Special sessions are called, but they are called only specifically to deal with one or two issues, whereas in Minnesota, when special sessions are called, they're called and any issue is fair game. And so in Wisconsin, in fact, you can have a special session running coincidentally with a regular session, and it takes issues off the table for the governor and for the regular session. And so, you know, while you're trying to open up our authority to have a special session called, are you willing to tighten up the issues on which a special session is discussing?
Well, looking at the history of special sessions in Minnesota, at least, it's called by the governor. It's usually a limited agenda, and I would assume that it would be a limited agenda during a special session that would only last for 7 days. I would see it as it would allow prompt response to disasters, and that would be the example I pointed to earlier this summer, the flooding in southeastern Minnesota and the bridge collapse. We would have probably been able to respond faster than we ultimately did and eliminate a lot of the uncertainty that people felt in southern Minnesota as a result of the flooding. And you remember there was quite a bit of back and forth as to whether or not and under what circumstances a special session would be called. The same kind of discussion taking place relative to the 35W bridge. Those would be two recent examples, and there's two historians that probably got together to come up with some others over the years. But that would, it would provide more flexibility, it would allow us to respond more promptly to those disasters. But I don't see a situation where it would be a wide-open agenda, especially when you limit it to 7 days.
I just have one last comment. I appreciate that, and your intent and my intent might be similar in trying to keep the agenda focused, but the law doesn't require that, and that's a concern. But the other last concern that I have relating to this bill is that while the Constitution limits the amount of days that we can be in regular session, it would not limit the amount of days that we could be in special session. Now, with your amendment, you're limiting each session, but you're not limiting the overall number of days the way I read it. So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, again, I appreciate you bringing forward a reform proposal. If we're going to put a constitutional amendment on the table, I'd much prefer we put one on the table which staggers our Senate terms, which would be a reform that would be well-received, I think, by the public.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have three questions here. First one's for you, actually. Where are we sending this bill after this?
It's going to the Rules Committee.
The Rules Committee, and so it's not making a stop at state government finance?
It's going to the Rules Committee.
Okay. Representative Kahn, wouldn't there be fiscal considerations involved with this bill? Special session for the
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think if the Rules Committee thinks that there are, they can send it back to state government finance.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, so Representative Kahn, you're saying that there's not any fiscal impact of this bill at all?
Representative Kahn. Representative Anderson, I don't believe it would be appropriate of Representative Kahn to anticipate any fiscal impact at this point.
Okay.
So, unless there was a fiscal note attached
Mr.
to the bill. Representative Kahn.
From what I know of the legislative budget, there's sufficient, I don't want to use the word padding in it, but there's sufficient flux in it so that it could handle the number, whatever number of special sessions, whether called by the governor or the legislature.
Okay.
Representative Carlson, I don't think Representative Kahn is helping you at this point. Representative Carlson, you want to...
I remember one time in the Finance Committee before I recognized her, I asked her if she was going to be helpful. certainly she would be, and then I recognized her. We've been together in the legislature for 36 years, so we can go back and forth a little bit. Mr. Chairman, Historically, with a constitutional amendment, there's a cost of about $2,000 when you put it on the ballot. If there's an agreement between the Chair of the Finance Committee, whoever that might be, and the Chair of the Ways and Means Committee, when it has minor fiscal impact, it need not go through the Finance and Ways and Means Committee. But that would be a decision under your motion that would ultimately be made in the Rules Committee.
Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, since we're the Policy Committee, I won't get into the issues of the per diem, additional housing staff that we'll have to have on hand, perhaps overtime that would have to be paid, and all of those kind of things that are involved with a special session. I think the newspapers have, and the television stations have reported on that, on special sessions in the past, that it is a significant cost to the state. But I did want to talk to you a little bit about this supporting article that you have in our package today from the Bemidji Pioneer, and it's talking about that the legislators can't wait for February 12th. They wish that session had started sooner. Correct me if I'm wrong, isn't it the House and the Senate that determine what day we come back to the legislature when they reconvene?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
So, Representative Carlson, we could have called for our session to start January 1 of 2008.
Well, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, the issues that you're referring to there were events that were unanticipated. And so when we adjourned last summer, we set the date having no idea that there would be such things as a 35W bridge collapse or the storm of the century or whatever, however you would describe it, down in southeastern Minnesota. And hence, when you have those kinds of problems or events, you sometimes need a special session. So those would have been unanticipated, and I think the intent of that article there was to point out that legislators, once those events took place, would have liked to have had the opportunity to resolve those issues in a more timely manner.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, I'll leave you on that part, but I did want to discuss with you just a little bit on the example that you used. I thought it was kind of interesting because, correct me if I'm wrong, you said that you got a call from the speaker. The speaker said, you're going to be offering this amendment to this bill. You're going to get this passed. This is part of the agreement. You took it to the Rules Committee, and then the Rules Committee said, nope, we're not going to accept this. Isn't that an example of the process working and doing exactly the opposite of what you are concerned about?
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I never mentioned the Rules Committee.
Oh, excuse me. Was it a different committee then that voted it down?
It was in a conference committee.
Okay.
Representative Anderson, any further questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, just to clarify. So, in essence, your fellow member said the agreement that was made between the Speaker, the Majority Leader in the Senate, and the Governor, we don't like it, go back to the table. Is that correct?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman,
let's let Representative Carlson finish a sentence before you speak.
That went on the bill that you're referencing that I told the story about. My point with that, Mr. Chairman, was that things happened so fast as a result of that ironclad agreement between the legislative leadership and the governor that there wasn't an opportunity for legislative hearings on the budget balancing bill, and I felt at the time and still to this day feel that when you're having a major finance bill like that going through, that in that case probably touched all aspects of state government, there should be an opportunity for public input before it was acted upon, and we do that through the committee process.
One last question, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson. So when you're talking about the 7 days, are you talking about us just handling one budget bill, or are we talking about handling all of the different areas from education to transportation to the environment? Because I know that you're concerned about the time frame, and looking at 7 days, is that your intent that 7 days we'd be able to handle all of those budget items then?
Representative Carlson. Mr. Chairman, you know, we're not talking here about special sessions, whether they're called by the governor or by the legislature, if this were to be enacted by the people of Minnesota, by the way, this would have to go to a vote. A wide open agenda item. That would happen to be a budget balancing bill that touched on all aspects of state government, but we weren't putting through several different appropriations bills that was done prior to that. They were adjustments to those bills.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out that Representative Ann, I know it's tough when these aged historians keep rambling on, but she was mixing up two stories. The one that failed by a vote of one in the Rules Committee was the original version of the bill, not that budget resolution.
All right. Thank you, Representative.
Yes, Representative Kahn, you might not want to point out mixing of two stories or more together after yesterday.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
There are times when it's appropriately done and times when it's accidentally done.
And both can be inappropriate. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, we had a chance to speak very briefly about this bill before the hearing today, and I had a lot of concerns about the limits, about whether the legislature could call an unending session and special session, and I think that the limit of the 7 days that you've added in the amendments, the requiring that the subject be stated in the agreement and the order, and that I know that even when there are parties that are in the majority, even when there are parties that have a significant majority, I think getting agreement of a majority of the members of each house is a significant hurdle, especially written agreement beyond a single, even to get a single 7 day session. I think the additions of your amendment limit it significantly. I don't think it will affect at all the governor's ability to call a session. I think that still is from speaking with counsel, is still open-ended as it is now. I think this is a very nicely crafted bill with the amendment on it, and I can now support it, and I appreciate you making these changes.
Well, thank you.
And I would also remind the body that to the date of starting, I remind the committee is to the date of starting session that there were those, I believe we're even on this committee, who argued that we should start even later than we did, and given our economy and the tragedies of this fall, that I think having this power to make some changes quickly would have benefited the state and the public, and I appreciate you bringing this down, Representative Carlson.
Thank you. Representative Carlson, any last comment on the bill?
No, I think Mr. Chairman has had a good discussion. So.
Representative Broad?
Mr. Chairman, I just wondered if Representative Kahn was going to roll call the bill, and if not, I will.
Representative Broad, is that a motion for a roll call?
Yes, sir.
Representative Broad has requested a roll call. I will renew my motion that House File 2554, as amended, be passed and re-referred to the Rules Committee. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Henderson?
No.
Broad?
No.
Emmer?
No.
Christian?
Aye.
Hollis? Kahn?
Aye.
Thielman?
Aye.
Morgan?
Aye.
Nelson? Olson?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Poppy?
Aye.
Simon?
Aye.
Winsor?
Aye.
There being 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. Representative Carlson, thank you.
Thank you, and thank the members of the committee.
Representative Chesky is here, and I know she is busy negotiating the tax bill, or what's left of the tax bill. So, Representative Chesky, I think we'll go to House File 1394.
Mr. Chairman, the
Eastland
Amendment.
Representative Broad, I don't think that would be appropriate to this bill.
No.
Representative Chesky, I will move that House File 1394 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. I have two handouts coming around, and I'm really hoping people can take a look at them to clarify what's happening in this bill. I think the map explains what this bill is attempting to address. And then there's also a memo from House Research that was drafted last year to answer some questions related to this bill. Mr. Chair, if I may, this bill is an attempt to take the Bloomington School District, which is currently all elected by an at-large process, which there are 7 members of the city of the school board, and instead bring forward a hybrid election boundary system identical to our Bloomington City Council system, which is 4 wards and 3 at-large. And so the way to think about this is you would layer on after every redistricting, just like we do for the legislature, the city council boundaries, and the elections would take would use the same coterminous lines as our city council races do. This is a bill that some of you are familiar with, since Minneapolis passed the same bill, and other legislators have brought these bills forward in the past. To put it in perspective, Bloomington is as big as many school districts. The enrollment, I think, is about 10,000. We have school board members here, both for and against this bill, who could give us the exact enrollment. But it's we're the third largest city in the metro, and we've had a recurring problem, with some exceptions over the last 20 years, where we have the preponderance of the elected officials basically live in one part of the city. We're a very large, very diverse school district, and Representative Peterson and I and Representative Slocum, one way to think about it, we all represent Bloomington, 3 state reps. 6 of our 7 board members live in Representative Peterson's district. What this bill attempts to do is to have some geographic representation, and it does that by drawing boundaries. It would not allow for a situation where you have an election area that is all wards, and therefore everyone could have their little fiefdom and get territorial and hold up the process. It would have 4 of 7 would be a ward, and 3 are at large. So there's always 3 people who can be elected anywhere in the city, and Representative Peterson knows we sat together on our city council with this identical model. Representative Peterson was the mayor while I was a board member, and the Bloomington City Council has functioned very well in this regard. Some history about Bloomington is that Bloomington once had an at-large city council where you could come from anywhere in the city, and it went to a ward system in 1976 to address this very issue. And really, no fault of anyone, what's happened over time is we have one part of the city that has a lot of representation geographically and another that does not. And so you understand the politics maybe of the issue, because this is not a partisan issue. I represent both sides of the city. We have 2 high schools in our city, and about half the kids in one high school I'm represented by, and about half the kids in the other high school I represent them too. I grew up in one side of the city. I have kids that go to school on the other side of the city, so my interest is what's best for the whole city. I'm the state rep who represents both halves of the city. Representative Peterson represents one half, and Representative Slocum represents another. And I've sensed for years, as I door knock, that a lot of people have a lot of concerns about this continuing problem where we're having the elected officials coming from one part of the city. And I should say, Mr. Chair, those elected officials are great people. This is a difficult issue because it feels personal, I'm sure. And I've supported almost all of their candidacies, but this bill has not attempted to do anything for those people. It would change this process in the year 2013. I've been pursuing this issue since before the majority of the school board that's there now was elected. And so it's not about the people who are currently sitting there. It's about trying to have a geographic representation in our school district. We're very fortunate that our school district boundaries are coterminous with our city. Not many of you have that situation. We have it very nice. Representative Peterson and I get to represent a city that has the exact same boundaries as the school district, exactly. And so what I'm trying to do in this bill is line up the election boundaries as well. So if you look at the map, you should be able to see the orange is the boundary of the city, and the blue dots show you where the elected officials live. And so what I'm trying to do is guarantee that each quarter of the city would get one voice, and then the other 3 would run at large. So with that, Mr. Chair, I know there are testifiers for and against, and I'll stand for questions.
Representative, I only have one person on the list. Jim, is it Sorum?
And Farms on our school board as well. And there are a few more school board members.
There may be others, but since we're under a rather tight timeline, and I know people have traveled a distance, so welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is James Sorum. I'm a senior citizen taxpayer from Bloomington. And I also am one of seven members of the school board of Bloomington that school is directed to. I speak only for myself, not the board, and I'm here today to speak in support of this passage. Representative Lynchewski has shared with you some of the background details of the bill. But I want to share with you my perspective of why we need to ensure this adequate representation of all citizens to our elected governing board, similar to the principle used for a legislature, city council, or county board. Simply stated, school boards are elected on a nonpartisan basis to act on behalf of and with extensive participation by the community to establish a structure designed to ensure that all learners, young and old, have the opportunity to achieve and also to be accountable to all citizens for the management of fiscal resources. Now, having said that, historically, school boards are elected at large. And back in the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, when school districts were matched with the city and surrounding areas, a somewhat homogenous society, the at-large election didn't cause a problem. Usually the five or six most involved citizens in the community and the education circles were elected by popular vote. Fewer schools, fewer issues. Then came sprawl. Cities grew and expanded. New cities cropped up and diversity became a significant factor. And our school districts were no longer homogenous or contiguous with city boundaries. This created some geographic concerns. The concept of representative government to allow everyone to vote for someone from their geographic area to represent them in some form of government wasn't happening. Voices were not being heard. This is where we find ourselves today. Bloomington, the fifth largest city in the state, became very diversified. We have 36% diversity now, and we anticipate by 2015 we'll have 50% diversity. Certain areas have been redeveloped and repopulated from previous times. This suggests a different election structure needs to be implemented to provide better representation to its school board to make sure all the voices are heard. Bloomington City Council, as Ann had said, struggled with it and finally opted for four district representatives and three at large. This has worked very well. The school board could use the same boundaries with no additional cost to the city or the school district. Now, you all may know some districts that are in this situation already or some that are even anticipating it. So the big question is, why does the legislature need to get involved in something local? Why can't, if it's such a good idea, why don't we do it? Well, I guess it's because this issue has been previously brought up to our board, which is the local governing body, to make a decision like this. It has been rejected or turned down. You have the map for reference, and let me just state, no incumbent wants to be redistricted out or voted out of a seat. And we have, it's been this proportion for quite a while. People have shared with me that running in an at-large position is costly and overwhelming to challenge an incumbent. It would be much easier to garner votes and to get helpers in a geographic area that's smaller. They always want to know, people want to know where they, who their rep is and where they are from. Recently in the 2007 election, there were no challengers for three positions. It was for the incumbents, it was uncontested. In 2005, there were five candidates for four positions, three incumbents and two challengers. But in 2003, there were eight candidates for three seats, two incumbents, and six challengers. And this was compounded by a lefty referendum. So you can imagine, some of the candidates were opposed to the referendum. Now, our legislative representatives have also heard from the constituents that they feel they aren't represented on the board, and they want to know why. Their concern is legitimate, and since nothing was being done at the local level, they suggested introducing the bills that would help us restructure to the benefit of all citizens. I might add that every once in a while, local government needs a nudge from the legislature to revise or improve their methods of operations, right? But don't take away our funding, please. I also think the way this bill is written provides time to implement changes so as not to affect the existing incumbents adversely. Bloomington has a proud tradition of being a leader in the education world from preschool to adult learning. We are continually looking for newer and better ways to improve and serve our citizens. The board and the administration work hard to provide the best climate we can to improve for our employees and students. We communicate openly and regularly with our citizens, but sometimes that isn't enough. There are still people feeling disenfranchised, hence the need for a better election process. Now, there are many stories I could share from my 15 years serving on the school board of people not knowing who their board member is, or is there one in my area, or who do they talk to when they have a concern. As hard as we try to communicate with everyone in general, many people want to meet and talk to a representative personally in the neighborhood they live in, that they shop in, that they worship in, and that they socialize in. And while our main goal is to do what is right for all kids in our district, regardless of what election district they live in, or which school they go to, we also are accountable to 70% of our citizens who don't have children in schools, but support our programs and don't want to see their taxes spent unwisely, and who need a voice. Some opponents to this bill might say, leave things alone. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I subscribe to a slightly different philosophy. Let's improve it so that it doesn't break. I'm sure you're all familiar with what that means. Others might ask, what if no one is qualified or someone doesn't want to run from an area? I would answer, qualifications are minimal, and when the time comes, there will be people to step up and apply. Now, as far as questions of single issue, special interest, or anti-tax candidates, the new district approach wouldn't stop a single candidate from being elected, whatever their platform is, but it would be less than the chance of a slate of candidates running together to form a block of votes. In 2009, we have 4 seats up for election under our current structure. An anti-referendum, anti-tax slate of 4 could campaign and win, and therefore become a majority on the board. Heaven forbid. But if a new districting structure was available, that wouldn't happen. In closing, I would just like to believe that the passage of this bill would make citizens, the Bloomington School District, stronger, more responsive to, and respected by its citizens. We have been proud of the leadership role we play in Minnesota's educational circles with our business partnerships and collaborative efforts with other school districts. We also know we have to change the way we do business if we are to survive in our constantly changing state and national cultures. We have taken steps to do so in the management of our schools. Our citizens, parents, and students have helped make us one of the best districts in the state. And by opening up our election process to allow more proportion, participation, and meaningful representation, we can maintain that leadership role. There is an old adage, if we always do what we always did, we will always get what we always got. You know how meaningful that is with your efforts as a legislature. Status quo is not an option. I think the time is right for change, and I know we can do better in Bloomington with your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Teske, there's an amendment that Mr. Gehring drafted. You should have a copy of it before you.
Yes.
You do now. If this is the amendment that you wish to have added to the bill, I'll move the amendment, but I want you to take a look at it to make sure this is what you had requested.
Thank you for moving that, Mr. Chair. And it means we may want to have House Research describe what the amendment
is. Mr. Gehring, I'm going to have him describe the amendment, and then I'll move it if this is what you'd like added to the bill.
Mr. Chair, this amendment would delay the effective date of changes to the school district structure in Bloomington to provide that they would only be effective for elections held in 2013 and thereafter, and that would apply regardless of whether the district itself adopts this section on its own or whether it's placed to the voters and approved by the voters.
Yes.
Representative Teske, this is the amendment.
I'll
move the amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And now we are to the bill as amended. And Mr. Sarum, I don't know if you wanted to speak to the amendment. Did that make any difference to your comments? That's fine. All right. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question I have, I think, for Representative Lanchesky on the map here. Can you tell us where the school sites are, the location?
Representative Lanchesky.
Mr. Chair, there throughout, we have 3 middle schools, 2 high schools, and I believe 11 elementaries, and, you know, I could draw them up for you and bring it over. It's kind of hard to verbally describe them, but...
They're on there with flags.
Oh, okay, they're on there with flags. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Olson, their flag.
Are they red, white, and blue flags?
No.
Representative Olson, I don't know their flags. They might be when you get down to that level. Representative Lanchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, if you would permit me, at the risk of some embarrassment here to my testifier, I do want to put that testimony in context. Mr. Sorum is a Republican, so he's party opposite. And I've often thought he would be someone who would run against me.
And in fact, that would be quite a challenge. And I tell you that because I want you to know this is not a partisan initiative. One side of our city now has its high school with 42% minority. One of its middle schools is 80% minority. That part of the city has not had a geographic representation. The school board members are fabulous, and they are representing the whole district. They are setting policy for the whole district. But we all know as people who come from an apportioned system that you like to know who your legislator is, and if all 134 of us came from Tiving, I think the people in the rest of the state might feel a little concerned about that.
Who wouldn't be the rest of the state?
or if all 67 senators lived in, you know, Bloomington. I mean, we're a very big and very diverse school district. And this is something that I think we will see repeated across the state of Minnesota over and over as large school districts diversify. And I'm sure the chair and others who have followed these election issues are aware that a number of these bills are out there already. Some have already passed, and many more are in the works. One of the school board members asked me, who's not here today, if why not just do this statewide? And I actually don't have a problem with that. I don't think all the rest of you are ready for a bill to do it to your school district, but Bloomington has struggled with this issue for a long time, and gentle hints and encouragement has not worked. There have been some folks who said, well, you should just recruit people and kind of run their campaigns to make sure they fill those slots. I mean, that's not how democracy works. It shouldn't be incumbent on a person or two to ensure that representational government is taking place. And I really appreciate that you would take the time to hear this bill. I do want to point out House Research's memo that you have in front of you, because there was some confusion. This was written to me last year. I've had some people receive information that implied that you don't have the right of the legislature to do this. Not accurate. And this House Research memo says from Mr. Strom, in Minnesota school districts are local governmental units created by state law. Minnesota school districts, unlike school districts in other states, have no constitutionally prescribed rights or powers. Goes on to lay out the part of the Constitution that addresses this in our Minnesota Constitution. And in summary, says, as a result, the legislature may, if it chooses, make any general changes it wants in the boundaries, organization, or governance structure of Minnesota school districts. For example, the legislature could abolish school districts, rearrange school district boundaries, create new board structures, or change the election process for school board members. And that's what I'm asking here today.
All right. Representative Olson.
Thank you. I think you have a good bill. Appreciate it. There's the picture. I think it's more complete that way. Appreciate the bill. I don't think it might be good to go statewide, however, because in some districts, they wouldn't be able to get people to run. And that could be a real problem.
Representative Morgan.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I noticed that Representative Peterson would have to be recognized. I'd prefer to defer to him.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask the testifier, Ms. Storm, we've been friends for a long time, but when you referred to yourself as senior, I thought, what does that make me?
I'm sorry, but I thought it might add to the credibility of the testifier.
Mr. Storm, you don't have to answer it. He has just been an outstanding member of our community and the school board. And I think that's reflective of the type of caliber of people we've had on the school board. So he's a great man and a great community.
Thank you. Representative Morgan.
Okay.
No further discussion. Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 1394, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Winchester.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Members, I'm going to go to House File 3309. This is a bill that is in reference to legislation we passed. I assume we have the commissioner here. So if Commissioner Anderson would come down. Last year we passed a bill that would eliminate DOOR. House File 3309 simply has some language that would facilitate that. So, Commissioner, if you would address the bill, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Pat Anderson, Commissioner of DOOR, the last Commissioner of DOOR, I should say. This bill, I'll be very brief. This is very simple. The legislation that passed last year, merging the Department of employee relations into finance, health, and administration required us to essentially do a cleanup bill this session. And so this is the cleanup bill. That's all this is. It changes different language to strike Dewar from different statutes. It gives it authority to some of the other commissioners, including administration and finance. So it was required within the last bill. It's a simple cleanup bill and relatively uncontroversial. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to move that House Bill 3309 be recommended to pass and be placed in the General Register. Members, there is an amendment.
Oh.
It is the AO8-1134 amendment. I will move that amendment, and then, Commissioner, would you address the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just oversight in drafting the bill. It allows the deputy, who is really the chief bargaining official for the state, to remain with that, and it was something that was worked out when we discussed this with the unions and so on. So it was really just a drafting error on our part.
Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. To the bill? Any discussion to the bill? Seeing no discussion, then I'll renew my motion that House File 3309, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Commissioner. I saw Representative Lang. Is she still here?
Mm-hmm.
Where is she? She was here. Did she leave? She left. Would one of the pages get Representative Lang to face the hearing room and bring her up? And I think we've covered everything except for the first bill on the agenda. Members, until Representative Lang comes, let's have the Secretary of State's office come down. Members, I'm not going to move this bill yet. I'd prefer to deal with Representative Lang's bill if she comes up, but what we'll do is start a discussion of what this bill entails. This is House File 3172. For members or individuals who were not here yesterday, there was a discussion of why we are bundling bills into these packets, so I'll repeat it. The preference of the chair and the preference of Senator Rest is to send election bills out individually. However, leadership's preference in the House has been to have an omnibus election bill. Those have not fared well with the governor. They have been vetoed. The compromise is to do bundling, and in anticipation of working with the governor and getting a signature, we can't guarantee that the governor will support everything in this, but we have worked with the governor, and the Secretary of State's office has for the last few months. So we anticipate a signature of this bill with the inclusion of the bills that you see underneath House File 3172. So, Ms. Frazier, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record, and if you do a description of the bills that are included in House File 3172.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Beth Frazier. I'm the Director of Governmental Affairs for the Secretary of State's Office. And as Chair Pawlowski said, we have been in discussion with the Governor's Office and have discussed every section of all three of these bills and have either dropped items or amended items to address every concern that they have raised. So we are hopeful that you will sign the bill. This bill includes six bills that have been introduced, and I don't know whether you want the authors to describe the different sections or would prefer to have me do that, Mr. Chair.
The preference is, Ms. Frazier, if you could just, we haven't moved the bill, if you could just pause for a second and step aside, we're going to take Representative Lang's bill here. I want to get her bill out, if she could come up, please. I'm sorry to start and stop, but Lang, I'm sorry. Representative Lang, I realize you're down in the basement, and I will move that House File 3066 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. So, to your bill.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, we have an amendment. Do you have that available?
Okay. the A08-1260 amendment?
Yes.
I will move the amendment. Why don't you describe the amendment for us, President Lane?
The amendment just changes the date at which any changes to the precinct caucus date would happen. Originally, it had been listed as 90 days prior to the date at which the caucus would be held, and that's just too late. For school districts, and most of the caucuses are held at schools, on school sites, so therefore the schools need more notice ahead of time so they can get the calendar and have it cleared for that night. So working with the MSBA and some of the school districts, we did March 1st of the year prior, and I've also spoken to the two major parties. Actually, I heard back from one of them that would be just fine.
Representative, Mr. Gehring's taking a look at the amendment to ensure it works. We haven't seen the amendment now, so if we will just hold for a second until he confirms that it does work. It works. All right. I've moved the amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Then discussion to the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, having the precinct caucus's date changed in statute is important because we have it established that the date is no longer relevant. And in changing it to what we now have, we decided instead of just putting another date in there that was make it changed again, who knows, we should just have it that any notification for it changed would be given to the Secretary of State by March 1st of the year prior so everybody would be up to date and the school districts could have their calendars appropriate for that time. I do have one testifier that could speak both from the perspective of a party official and at the same time as a school board person.
Is that Catherine Olson?
Yes.
If she wishes to come up. Welcome to the committee and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Catherine Olson, and that's K-A-T-H-R-Y-N-O-L-S-O-N, and I am a school board member from Columbia Heights, Minnesota. I'm also associate chair of Senate District 50 DFL. And I'm just here today to talk a little bit about the issues relating from the recent caucus change. For those of you who aren't familiar with Senate District 50, it comprises all of Columbia Heights, Hilltop, New Brighton, and Arden Hills, and parts of Fridley, St. Anthony Village, and Shoreview. And Representative Lane represents our A side of our district, which is Columbia Heights and parts of and Hilltop and parts of Fridley and St. Anthony. Our caucuses have always been in the schools. We hold them at Columbia Heights Middle School, Fridley High School, and generally we've held them at Moundsview High School. We like to have them in the schools. It provides continuity for our seniors, you know, our residents, particularly our senior citizens. We have new conveners this year, so we like to have them in one place so that they can have assistance. And for new caucus goers, we can get them to the right room. At least if they know if they live in Fridley, they can get to Fridley High School and we can get them there. The schools are the only facilities that can really handle our needs. Two of our districts were able to rearrange their schedules, Columbia Heights and Fridley, but the third had events that could not be rescheduled. And that, as you can well imagine, caused enormous confusion and congestion. In addition, just to the confusion and congestion caused by the large numbers that turned out this year. We also had parents who had to choose between a basketball game, a ninth grade registration, or coming to caucus, and that doesn't do well for participation. We also had some confusion about fees. Normally, we are not charged, but this year, because of the change, there was some ambiguity in the law. And so one of our school districts, two did not charge us, but one did. They initially quoted us $900, which caused us to gasp at our Senate district meetings. We negotiated that down to about $350. If all three districts had charged $900, that would have obviously had a significant impact on our budget. So that's kind of from the Senate district perspective, putting my school board member hat on now. School districts want to have caucuses in the schools. We want to have events in the schools. They're the heart of the community. And we want members, community members to come in and see the classrooms, see the artwork on the walls, the essays, see the schools. It's important that they come in. We want to work with the political parties to be able to have caucuses, notification by March 1st would help greatly. In our school district, our calendar committee meets in January and February. Then it's brought to the board in March and adopted. We're able to tweak it a bit in that month or so, but then we need to get it to the printer for delivery in August. You can well imagine between student activities, community education classes, it's very difficult to schedule those facilities. We appreciate that the political parties need to have flexibility in setting the caucus dates. March 1st, we feel, would enable both groups, accommodate both groups. We could get it on the calendar, make sure that nothing gets scheduled, and which support promotes attendance and participation. And also, MSBA also supports this bill for their member group. And I want to thank you for holding this hearing and having me here today to speak on House File 3066. And thank Representative Lane for bringing this up. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I want to remind everyone, session starts at 9:30, so we'd like to move quickly if we could. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm puzzled why we want both party caucuses to be able to have different dates.
Representative Lane.
It's not different dates. I don't know how you read that. We're asking, as it says here, the executives of the majority of the major parties, which was a description to, out of, we have three major parties, at least two of them need to come together and agree on a date. So it would be an agreed upon date. This is the process they used this past time. They agreed on a date and informed the Secretary of State and the other party what the agreement was.
Okay, I misunderstood.
Red Sibbles. All right, Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I read the weather. It's Section C that I read similar to, I think, where Representative Olson was going. Before the changes in the law, the parties consulted the Secretary of State's office, who then would make the change for the purposes of weather cancellations and changes. The way I read this, a party can consult with the Secretary of State's office, but the party can delay their caucus. So you could have the situation in which one party delays their caucus and one party does not. And that's, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but that's how I read it.
Mr. Gehring, can you clarify that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, the language as drafted does permit the party itself to determine whether a caucus should be delayed because of the weather. They are required to consult with the Secretary of State and the Weather Service, but ultimately it's the party's decision.
Representative.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's exactly what Representative Olson was pointing out, and I think would be something that I would be concerned with. It just seems to me that having an adjustment in dates and caucuses between the different parties doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense if that's not the intent of what you're trying to do. Maybe there's a way to rewrite that portion, or maybe that's the intent. I'm not sure.
Representative Lane?
No, actually, I just took the revisor's idea for how to write that. I kind of agree with you that I think it's an unintended consequence.
Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know that you want to move things forward today. I'd be happy to work with Representative Lane to make that adjustment and make sure that we have coincidental caucuses, if that's what your wishes are. I'd be happy to work in that direction.
Well, Representative Broad, if we're going to do that, then my preference is not to send it to the General Register and do this on the floor.
Yeah.
So I would prefer that we hold the bill, and then we can bring it up at our next meeting with the language that would be appropriate. So if there is that correction, Mr. Gehring, can you have that drafted for us, and we would be able to do that expeditiously at the next meeting?
Yes.
All right. So, members, I think that's what we'll do. And what I will do is withdraw my motion on the passage of the bill, and we will put the bill on the agenda for the next meeting, and we'll make sure that the amendment clarifies the issue that's been brought forward here.
Thank you.
So we will do that. I want to thank Ms. Olson for coming too and testifying, and I don't think we'll need you back. This should take almost no time once we bring the bill up.
That's fine.
Thank you for coming today.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Anderson, did you have one question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Lane, you know, I like this bill. I see where you're going with it. I have no problems with it at all. But
My concern is what your testifier had mentioned is we have a lot of schools that are maybe having functions on during these caucuses. I know at my caucus night there was basketball practice going on during the caucus night, and I'm just wondering, can you include some of that language in here too? Maybe I missed it and sorry to take
it.
It's actually in statute that the schools are not supposed to have other things going on, and it gets a little loose at times, but it is in statute.
Okay.
And just from the
Mr.
Chairman and the Senator, just from the school board perspective, we work very hard to make sure that nothing is scheduled on caucus night, whether it's athletic activities or community ed activities. They work very hard to make sure that that night is free. All from the school district, you know, we don't want a lot of people there.
Wait, hang on one second. We may have a potential fix here, and if we do, and that would clarify this. And I see we've got Mr. Gehring and Mr. Kuhl working on what looks like a fix. So just stay put for a second.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kahn, the bill and to the potential fix, historical perspective?
Yeah, a historical perspective, actually.
I prefer not a historical perspective at this point.
Well, I'm just pointing out that I don't understand the need to have the caucuses on the same date. They don't in other states. In 1968, specifically, I know that Minnesota did not have the Republican and the DFL caucuses on the same date, so I presume that for some long period before that it didn't. But I don't understand. It's a party function. I don't understand why we care. You're not allowed by law, unless you very quickly change your party affiliation. You only get to go to one anyway.
Okay, let's then count. Mr. Gehring, how are we doing?
Mr. Chair, this may take a few minutes.
All right. Why don't you work on this, and we do have, almost 15 minutes, so if you can work this out, we'll finish it today and do it. And if we could just hold back on the historical perspective.
Only because you were looking to fill a few minutes. I put that one in.
Fill would be an interesting word. But Representative Broad, do you have a question?
No, Mr. Chairman, I was just working with Mr. Gehring. Actually, I'm not sure that the section, even with the amendment, does what Representative Lane is trying to do related to lines 1.14 and lines 1.17, just based on the testimony. So I just was having a conversation to make sure that we're writing it the way the intent of the language is.
Dr. Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate your desire to work with the bill author here and others on these concerns, but in the interest of getting it right the first time, perhaps we might want to just delay until Tuesday and hopefully get it done quickly then. That would be my suggestion, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Morgan, I agree, but Mr. Gehring is also skillful and Mr. Kuhl is also, and between the two of them, if they resolve this appropriately, we may be able to move forward.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
this may be for later, but I just want to highlight the issue of why don't we just set a date so that the public knows every year when it's going to be and keep it out of the legislative session, delay it, have less politics involved in the legislative session, no focus on campaigns, just get our work done, come out of session, have a date later, and shorter campaigns would please the public, and I think we'd all fare better.
Part of the party's prerogative. I believe it's part of the party's prerogative to set that date. So,
Yes.
Is this an example of committee work?
Representative Winkler, yes. Sometimes you just pause and actually do work. Members, while they're working on that, House File 3172 has Representative McFarland, Kalin, Dietrich, Winkler, and Simon. That bill will be postponed one more time until Tuesday. And I don't want to keep those members waiting here. And so, once again, it's the chair's bill that will have to wait. This is a note.
It appears that we're just clarifying the paragraph from 1.14 to 1.17 a little bit to
right,
clarify
let's
more clearly.
Let Mr. Gehring do
and the one about the weather, which I thought we were actually attending to, is fine.
All right. So Mr. Gehring, you want to explain what the clarification is?
Mr. Chair, actually, it may be easier to sort of dictate the proposed amendment.
All right.
If that works. So I think, just for the sake of simplicity, the proposal would be to delete lines 1.14 all the way through 1.25, and then we're going to rewrite paragraph B. So the new paragraph would read, paragraph B, the date of a party's caucus shall be determined as agreed upon by a majority of the state executive committees of the major parties, comma, in consultation with the Secretary of State. The executives of the major parties must agree on a single determined date. The executive committee must provide notice of its chosen caucus date by March 1st of the year prior to the year in which the caucus is to be held. Period.
Representative Broad, does that address your concerns?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the most part, yes.
All right, Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, the Mr. Gehring read it a little bit fast, but on the first part of it, if I heard it right, the date of a party's caucus, if that was something in the plural or referencing precinct caucus date for the political parties was determined by, then it would be consistent throughout that the day is going to be a single day for all the political parties. Mr. Gearing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, that's correct. We're specifying that there's a single determined date as determined by a majority of the major political parties.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Olson.
Mr. Gearing, I heard that in the last part of the provision that you read, but to be consistent with that last part, if the first part read the same way, and that it wasn't a date for a party's caucus, but instead, and I just heard this, I don't have any language in front of me, if it instead was a the precinct caucus date for political parties, then the whole thing would reference, the context of the whole provision would be consistent to a day for all the political parties.
Mr. Gearing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson.
Maybe it's not necessary. I don't have the language in front of me.
I understand what you're saying. We'll make it parallel.
Representative Lane, does that also address your concerns and clarification?
Some of these are not my concerns. It's not a problem. My concern is the change to the executive committee. That's too broad. It needs to be the executives of the major political parties. Because the executive committees are too large to handle this.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to address this bill on Tuesday with language that's written and that's in front of us, so that everybody understands the author, most importantly, because it is her bill, and then those that have concerns. So once again, we'll bring this bill up with the written amendment, and I would hope that Representative Broad, Representative Olson, will work with Representative Lane and make sure that this is clear. When we bring it back up on Tuesday, will be our first meeting, I believe. So we'll put you up first. And members might want to watch what time this meeting starts. It may start earlier than 8 on Tuesday. Just to... No. That's the tax bill. That's not this committee. Something else. So with that, members, the House Bill 3172 will then be second. And Representative Morgan, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes of Wednesday, March 5.
Representative Morgan moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Meeting is adjourned.